My name is Glenn Fink. I'm a researcher at Pacific Northwest National Labs. It's a think tank up there in the Northwest. And I'm going to talk to you today about autonomic computing from a 30,000-foot level. And just briefly, this is the agenda that I'll talk about here. First, I'll tell you a little bit about who I am and about what autonomics is and isn't. Then I'll tell you a little bit about where I think we are right now. And what people have thought about autonomics that they've told me. I interviewed a number of people for this to see, to do some research to find out what was really happening. I'll talk from the results from that. I'll talk about the love-hate relationships they have, wish lists, fear lists. Then I'll talk briefly about what this might mean for you and your job. And future directions, where is autonomics taking us? Where are we taking it? And I'll conclude. So, just to start off, in case you have to leave suddenly, this is the main thing to get from my study that I did. First of all, there is no autonomic computing right now. We have stuff that looks sort of like it, but we're at least 5 to 10 years away from the vision of autonomic computing that you saw with Chess and Kepert several years back. There are lots and lots of automated subsystems that look autonomic to some extent, but they don't necessarily interoperate with one another, not necessarily based on any kind of standards, and what they mean by autonomics is completely different from tool to tool. Most importantly, for you all to know, there will always be a need for human system administrators. I can say that with confidence. I don't care if we get to the HAL 9000 stage. Actually, that movie was a great illustration of why we always need to have a human in the loop. But one thing you can expect is that change is going to be constant, and your duties will change because of autonomic computing. Just a question of how. We don't all always know with how that's going to be. So this is who I am. My background is in information visualization and computer security. I like to think of myself as a human-centered computing person more than anything else. In other words, I don't care how slick it is and how cool it is. I care if people like it, if they want it, if it'll help them in their jobs. If it's actually useful, that's what I care about. And my experience is I worked for 15 years as a software engineer for the Navy, and I got my PhD recently from Virginia Tech, and right now I'm a senior research scientist at PNNL, Pacific Northwest National Labs. I am the adaptive systems focus lead for our information and infrastructure and integrity initiative, which is a big, long acronym, which basically means we're looking for new ways to secure our very complicated computational infrastructures that we have. And I am currently, one of my research areas that brought me there is researching how adaptive agents can be used to implement autonomic defenses across multi-organizational infrastructures. So that's who I am. That's who what I looked like before I got my beard. And it's just now stopped itching, so that's a good thing. So this is where I'm getting my information from. It doesn't all come from me. I've done some research into self-healing systems and into biologically inspired designs and the academic literature for autonomic computing, wide variations of information is available in that area. And I've interviewed several colleagues, system administrators, researchers from various institutions. Computer security analysts are very important in my job right now. So I've interviewed some of them, and just other stuff that I found along the way. And so I'm hoping that this will be something new to you, something useful to you, and something applicable to what you do today. So what is autonomic computing? Well, this is the typical, well-known definition of autonomic computing, motherhood and apple pie, self-star systems. Everyone's read this probably. If you haven't read this, just basically let me say to you that the idea is that autonomic systems will be self-managing. They will be able to take care of all the nitty-gritty details so that we don't have to do that for them. For some reason, that threatens people in this audience, and I guess it's because people are afraid that they will be replaced by a computer at some point. But I don't think you're in any danger. Here's where I think, this is my own personal guesstimate of where we are on each of these scales. I think that we have about 60% of the way towards fully autonomic self-configuration. We have some nifty tools out there. CF Engine and Puppet are among them. Bconfig and some other ones are out there, and they're able to handle a lot of the jobs that we need to do for the system configuration, self-configuration area. And they don't necessarily self-configure right now, but they do allow you to easily reconfigure once you've configured the first time. Self-healing, I'm giving it a generous 25% just because we have so much academic literature out there that talks about how systems can heal themselves when they are known to be compromised. And this is mostly in the security area. The configuration management area, this is probably less true, but 25% is a generous estimate for that. Similarly, for self-optimizing, 10% is a very generous estimate. Systems, the only kinds of systems that I have really seen that self-optimize are things like earthquake simulators or landslide simulators, that there's a specific program, and it knows how to do one thing, and it knows how to optimize itself to solve that one problem. It doesn't know anything about tape drives, disk drives, users, anything like that. So that 10% is probably very generous. And then self-protecting, I'm giving it 40%. That's probably pretty accurate because we have a lot of good security technologies that are able to automate the detection process and even somewhat the response process. It's nowhere near what a human being can do, but it's a lot faster than what a human being can do. So I'd say 40%. Now, those don't add up or average. I'd say altogether that probably puts us about 15% of the way toward autonomic computing because the systems that do each of these things don't talk to one another and don't work together and aren't based on the same standard set. And as a result, it's going to be very hard to put those things together, and we're not going to be 30% along if we average all that out. It doesn't work that way. So, levels of maturity. This is what IBM has defined, and this is a pretty good framework for looking at it. There's the basic level where we're basically doing everything manual. I'm the system administrator, and I'm typing everything in. I'm running shell scripts and things like that. Then there's managed, where I have not just my own little shell scripts, but we have centralized tools that everybody in the sysadmin group uses, and they bring the system to a known state automatically, but you have to manually trigger them off. Then there is the predictive idea, where we're going to find out what we, based on what we see the usage of the system is, like we're seeing a lot of web hits right now, so we think that the web server is going to need more resources, so we'll launch more VMs with web server instances on it or whatever. That's the predictive idea, and that's a future thing right now. Adaptive systems take that predictive element, and they're also going to find out other system elements besides just load and things like that. They're going to find out what the total state of the system is and try to adapt the way the system is configured to manage how the system will work, to optimize the system. And then autonomic is where we're going to take all that adaptability and we're going to run it from a policy-based in human-expressible, human-understandable language. So what I'd say based on where we are right now is we're at the managed level. We have some centralized tools, and we're just barely clinging to the managed level at this point. This quote down here I'll draw your attention to says, autonomic computing is not an overnight revolution in which system-wide self-managing environments suddenly appear. Rather, it's a gradual evolution of new technologies, methodologies, best practices implemented using the infrastructure or IT infrastructure library, ITIL, aligned flows. So there are three things that I want to draw your attention to. New technologies, methodologies, and best practices. That's what autonomic computing is all about. That's what makes autonomic computing happen. Now, I don't know, does anyone know what the IT infrastructure library is? Okay, some of you actually do. That's good. I would defy anyone to tell me what an ITIL aligned flow is, though. But basically what this means is that we have a standard way of doing things, and we think it's the best because a lot of people have agreed on it, and we've all put it in a centralized document, and that's called ITIL, and now we're going to make the systems work according to that. That means we all agree on how it goes. It's very, very hard to get people to agree. It's much, much harder to get computer systems to agree because they are various ages and maturity levels. So moving on here, some of my interview subjects gave some definitions of autonomic computing for me. Basically, that it was a continuum. One person gave the example of his children, our autonomic computing systems, right? When they start out, they can't do anything for themselves. They are fully at the basic level. As they get to be infants and get to be toddlers, they can become the managed level, where they can do some things on their own. But the older they get, the more authority and management ability they subsume. Sometimes they get it too soon, and it's bad for all of us. But basically it's a continuum. There's not going to be one day when we're going to say, all right, today we have no autonomic computing systems, and tomorrow we have autonomic computing systems. It just doesn't happen that way. It's a direction. It's not a goal. So you might not even, you'll be able to watch it happening, but you won't be able to see it happen. Evolutionary changes, though, can have revolutionary effects. Just take the cell phone, for example. Not much different to be talking on the telephone, right? But when everyone has a cell phone, it changes the way we do things. So you can expect that small changes, evolutionary along the way, will have some unusual effects on the system administration profession as a whole. Let's see, some differences between automation and autonomics. Automation is usually considered lower level, whereas autonomics, people think of that as an interacting with the environment, somewhat independently. Automation is handling a task that you've designed and defined very well, but autonomics might handle ill-defined tasks. And AC is much more contextual than rule-based reasoning. So we're not talking about having a program that solves a particular problem. We're talking about something that has some social awareness of how do other systems solve this problem? What should I do next based on that? Taking experience into consideration. So these systems are just different from automation in some ways. We know where we're going. We just don't know how we're going to get there. And here's some drivers behind it. First of all, I'll tell you that some estimates say that it's an 18-to-1 supply or demand versus supply problem with IT professionals trying to find enough people to handle the amount of automation we have, and it's only getting worse. Someone just told me after the last talk that there really is no problem with jobs these days. I'm glad to hear that. But I would say overall that with the growth of the IT infrastructure as fast as it is, outstripping Moore's Law, we are going to have more and more shortage for skilled labor. There are three crises that I see driving this. First of all is the software crisis. It's been around since the 70s or before that, when software is typically over budget, it's too late, it's buggy, and it's not maintainable. The hardware crisis is another issue. You have lots of multiple vendor issues. And just thinking about this, if you have a disk drive that only fails, the mean time between failure of 365 days, if you have 1,000 of them, you're going to have a drive failure every single day. Now, if you have to checkpoint based on that, and the checkpointing takes a certain amount of time when you replace the drive, that's going to affect the applications that are running. And it's going to cause, eventually, if you have large numbers, thousands, maybe millions of drives, you're going to have a lot of thrashing happening. And so that's a hardware crisis is really driving this. How do we get hardware when it will fail? How do we seamlessly replace it? And then there's an education crisis. Not enough people are educated well enough to do the job that you guys do. And that's a problem that's growing also. Overseas, there are people who are getting master's degrees just so they can be servers at McDonald's, okay? And this is from a friend of mine who came back from Egypt recently. It's just amazing the difference in what's required for a particular kind of job. So the cost of IT personnel is prohibitive, but the growth, the growth of infrastructure that's required is a tremendous strain on the budget. So what I've said here is thousands of able-minded Asians, or you can say South Americans, or you can say anybody else, are looking for jobs and are able to do it cheaper. Just look what happened to the automotive industry. That could happen here. I understand the situation is better now than it was a couple years ago, or a couple months ago, but we don't know. We'll see. So this is the way I look at autonomics. It's like this big, deep ocean. And we have just barely begun to scratch the surface of what autonomics can do for us. There's two categories. First of all, there's vertical systems that we have now. They're narrow, but they are truly autonomous in some way. Like PSAD is a great example. High availability Linux is a good example of that. Automatic software updates somewhat, although that's not really autonomic. It really requires user approval for everything. And also, you don't get to control, okay, please don't bother me on these days, or these are the kinds of updates you can get automatically. These kinds I don't want you to get automatically. It's not an autonomic system yet, but it has a vertical sense in which it is. It runs by itself. It handles itself. You don't have to think about it. But then there's also horizontal systems that give you broad automation capabilities, but no real autonomy in them. And Tivoli is a great example of that. Tivoli is basically, well, the idea behind the Tivoli Intelligent Orchestrator is to be a programming language for systems, which is what a lot of people want out of autonomic computing. And it'll be a good actuator for autonomic computing, but it is not itself autonomic computing. It's more like a scripting system. CF Engine and Puppet are similar ideas. The idea behind Puppet particularly is to be a programming language approach. That's what we'd like to get to anyway. And so we'll see where these packages go in the future. But right now, they give you lots of possibilities, but not a lot of depth that you can do. So I was at the configuration management BOF last night, and this is a debate that came up, and apparently comes up every year, although I didn't know that, is this purist versus pragmatist approach. Okay, so we have two camps, and when you get in large groups of people, we always express our most dear opinions in the highest contrast we possibly can so we can make sure people understand what we are saying. But when that happens, the middle ground gets left out, and I'm suggesting that maybe there's a third way here, and we can talk about this later if you want to be interested in your opinions. But the purist believes that maintenance is the dominant cost in the long run, and that these policies need to be defined centrally and practiced decentralized throughout. They push or pull to the clients. And you need to be able to keep the administrator in line with this. Don't let the administrator interfere. And it seems like the people who are advocating this are coming from environments mostly where they have lots of similar machines. The amount of production pressure involved, you can argue whether they're under high pressure environments or not, but I can definitely tell you that the pragmatists were more in the high pressure environments than lower pressure environments. They were in the environment where downtime costs you millions of dollars an hour, they were looking at decentralized approaches to configuring things. And we're not just talking about configuration management with autonomic computing. We're talking about the whole self-star scheme. But this sort of applies to that. But they would like to be able to let the human administrator solve a problem quickly and then make the real solution, the real good solution later on, and then let that be part of our centralized approach. And that's what I think we sort of need to do. The problem is later almost never comes when you're in a high-pressure environment. But it would be good if we could get these pragmatic fixes that fix the thing right on the spot, and we could have them feed back into this trusted library, this ITIL or whatever, of practices. And the idea is sort of to make autonomics an open-source approach. I really think this is the only way it's going to survive, is if we have people who are feeding into this good ideas and good solutions, and allow autonomic systems to learn from one another, not just from the people. And that's an interesting thing in and of itself. What I would like to leave you with on this slide here is the idea is not human control so much as it is human supervision. No computer ever goes to jail. No computer ever loses his job, or maybe they don't care if they do. But we do care about that sort of thing, and so we still have to have some supervisory capability, but we don't want to be controlling every little bit that crosses the wire. We want to be able to stay at the high level and supervise things and let them go on their own. So here's some things that my interviewees told me that they loved and hated about autonomic computing and the idea of it. First of all, it can save a lot of labor, but then it hides information, and when you really want to find out something, you can't find it out because it's hidden. Now, this is mainly a problem because we don't really have true autonomics now that can solve all these problems. They can only do partial jobs, and then you have to clean up the rest, and if they hide information, it makes it difficult. It accomplishes individual tasks real well, but it fails to account for interactions between systems, and I have a good story about this. That my favorite thing that I heard about at work here was we have an RSA Secure ID server that's running on a Windows server box. And we added a group of scientists from another organization came and joined our organization, and they added about 1,000 people, which is a third, again, as much load as it had before. And so the Windows server says, hey, I'm getting overloaded. I'm running out of virtual memory. So it puts up a dialog box on this headless workstation and tells the user that, hey, we need to shut down some processes. Nobody listens to it. So it doesn't put anything in the logs, mind you. This is what I love. It doesn't kill any log entries about this. But then it says, I've got to shut down low priority processes. So what does it do? It shuts down the database process that the secure ID server is using. And the secure ID server says, oh, my database is down. Well, I can't do any authentication of people, but it's not a problem. I'll wait a few minutes and I'll try again. And it doesn't log anything either. So these two systems are trying to be autonomic. They're trying to save the system administrator problem. But what they don't do is they don't inform you, and they don't work well together at all. There's an overloading of the idea of priority here. RSA secure ID server says database is a low priority task because I can always start it up and stop it at any time. I can bring it back. It's not a big deal. Windows sees low priority and means it's not important. But it is important. It's critically important. But it's not supposed to dominate the processor time. So until we get a better idea of what systems, of characterizations of systems, we're going to have problems like this. Let's see, where were we? Can handle tasks previously only humans could do, but they don't know when to ask for help. Yes, sir? I don't know.
There we go. So I want to just second the comment about Windows and logging. I started the Linux HA project a while back, and I can tell Windows users when they start using it, they come over and they start using it, and I say, well, it didn't work. And I said, did you read the logs? Logs? Does it have logs? Windows, we never read the logs because they never have anything in them. And yeah. That's universal. Yeah. There's never anything in Windows logs, except we started a service that may or may not have worked.
Yes, I feel your angst, and that's a real problem. Computers should know when to ask for help, and they should at least be able to tell you when there's a problem. But that's a failing of that particular kind of system, and, you know, love it or hate it, that's the way it is. Let's see, anticipates user action, like prefetching for a web server. Windows Vista is a great example of this. If it notices you're looking at a particular website every day, it will go there and look at it. But from my security hat says, wait a second, what if that website is not supposed to be allowed on the corporate network? You take your laptop home, you surf it every single day, then you take the laptop to work, you plug it into my network, and I say, you're surfing to www.bad.com every day. And the guy says, I'm not doing it, my box does it for me. That's an issue that people have with autonomic computing. It can mask what the humans actually do, so you can't get good attribution of who actually did what. It handles known errors well, but it cannot handle completely new problems. If we knew how to solve the problem, we would program around it, but we don't. So we're always going to need people to be able to handle these problems. Huge efficiency gains, but it could violate unstated constraints. This is a problem where we just don't even know all the problems that we're going to face. And so when we say a constraint, like we have a service level agreement or something like that, we could get great efficiency gains with an autonomic system, but it might not know to not violate that SLA, or it might not know what the other systems that are depending on it need. And it faithfully does what humans might neglect. Backups is a great example of that, but it might end up wasting or duplicating effort because automatic systems, it's very hard to get them to do exactly what you want them to do and not anything more. So those are some love-hate issues here. This is the wish list that I got from the people I interviewed. They wanted a junior sysadmin they could boss around and give open-ended tasks and say, please go find out why it seems like these applications are running slower today than they were yesterday. And give me investigate and then report back to me. Give me some kind of enough detail, but not too much. And that's what people are looking for from this. They're looking for information hiding, but still having availability of that information. Click here for more details type thing. We're looking for a robust handling of these real-world situations without any supervision. So I can throw it into my environment and it will figure out what to do. That was what one guy said. Let me just throw it out there and let it figure out what it should do. That's a real pipe dream, but that's something people want it to be able to do. And they want it to be able to communicate like we do. Natural language would be great. We've got to watch natural language, though, because it's ambiguous. So that's the wish list. I have a number of fears here that was more fears than there were wishes. I'll just go over this real quickly. Will they know when to ask for help? How do you verify that the configuration that it does is a good configuration? That goes back to that ITIL thing. You know, do other people think this is good? And is the thing that other people think that is good, is that good for me? That's really hard to say. Can I trust that self-update is getting clean execs from a trustworthy source? You know, malware is becoming a lot more slick all the time. And you could make an argument that people like Sony's rootkits and stuff like that aren't that much better than some malware. But it seems to me it would be a good way for a malfolk person to get his malware into your system is to circumvent the automatic updating or the self-configuring part of it. If we can't get spell checking right, what are we doing trying to do autonomic computing systems? I don't know. I guess we... but we'll just keep hacking away at it, I guess. Second thing of fears here. So could autonomic systems be flipped so that they'll do harm rather than good? Autonomic computing systems might mean that system administrators are dumbed down so that they can't figure out how to fix things. So would they notice if they were flipped? And a question about the dumbing down, has this already happened? People wonder, our RPMs are so easy to use, you know, have the system administrators today gotten so unable to handle things that they don't know how to do real compilations on their own? And then the other question is, does it matter if it's happened or not? This is the tools we have. We're not going to go backwards anytime soon, so does it really matter? Will it hide so much information that investigation will be impossible? And this last one is the most important to me. Vendor system, the autonomic computing is a great example of how vendors could get unprecedented levels of vendor lock-in. If you do not use my autonomic computing system, peripherals that go with it, things that that it understands, then you will not be able to have the benefits of autonomic computing. So therefore, you have vendor lock-in for your disk drives, vendor lock-in for your CPUs, vendor lock-in for, you know, your memory or whatever else. That could be one of the big fears that people have. We know that according to IBM's vision, it won't work to have OS-specific or vendor-specific autonomic computing, but still, it's possible. And vendors, you know, will do this. They will lock you into these sorts of things, and this is a way they could do it. Anyway, fearless. These are multi-organizational issues. Okay, so imagine autonomic computing systems in a grid of cooperating organizations, all in what we're calling an infrastructure, mutually defending one another against attackers from the outside. I'm from the DOE, the Department of Energy area, and so we're thinking about protecting the critical U.S. infrastructures for electricity particularly. And the electrical infrastructure is made up of a whole bunch of independent companies that have separate system administrators, separate practices, proprietary data, separate networks. How do you make all these guys talk together and work together? Because the attacker doesn't really care who he attacks. He just wants to have a certain effect on the system, and he can take any effect on the system. He just wants to disrupt things. So this is a really tough problem. This is even tougher than getting people in the same organization to talk. Agreements. If you have separate organizations and you want to do service level agreements, right now they're executed between humans. What happens when they're executed between machines? What happens if your machine orders from more bandwidth from my machine at the ISP and I charge you for it and you get a bill saying you asked for more bandwidth than the business department says, wait a second, we can't do that, that's outside of our budget. Well, do I have to pay that? Do you have to pay that? Who ends up winning there? And this is a legal part that we just really are not ready to address yet. Let's see. Can they negotiate new agreements? You know, who sues who when the autonomic computing system agrees to something that I don't want to hold to? Who has the liability there? And once again, computers never go to jail, but people do. So we have to be very, very careful when we're doing these interorganizational agreements. So those are the fears people have. The number one fear that people have is, what about my job? And I encountered this last year. I was really actually surprised. But it makes perfect sense that if you're talking about this HAL 9000 or Star Trek computer or whatever, that there won't be any room for system administrators, because after all, you don't really see them running around in Star Trek anyway. It's the engineering department, but that's a different story. Right? I believe firmly that there will always be a need for human administrators to supervise the systems. Because even as the complexity of the systems we are monitoring with it is growing quickly, the complexity of the underlying systems that are being monitored and are being managed is growing much, much faster. So I don't think that we are in any danger of coming up with a great solution that'll solve all our problems and won't need humans anymore for a long, long time. The well-defined problems notwithstanding, there's always these ill-defined technical problems. I mean, after all, how many times do you come and solve the same problem again and again every day? If you do, then you write a script to get it to do that for you, and you have some automation that does it. Or you give it to somebody else who needs to learn, right? But there'll always be these ill-defined technical problems that didn't happen yesterday and won't happen again tomorrow, and there's no sense in programming them up because no one really knows how to fix the problem. It takes a human being. They can save work, but they can't handle every case. And even though we may be able to replace certain human functions, we're always going to need more and more automation. As long as the economy continues to grow the way it is, we're always going to need more automation, so we're not going to have job loss. We're going to get as much automation as we can handle and probably then some. So, and in the final analysis, like I said, people go to jail. Someone has to verify that the system is working correctly. A person has to be responsible. No one can sign on the dotted line, but no autonomic system can sign on the dotted line and say, I'll pay if things go wrong. But it will change things. There's no doubt about that. And anyone who's in this profession, especially a profession that's tied completely to technology, knows that change is the only constant. So these evolutionary changes, as I said, are great, and this is what we're seeing, but we can see eventually a revolutionary effect. And I think if we start to see autonomic computing systems making agreements across organizations with others, that will be a revolutionary change. It may be one step beyond what we got right now, but that will definitely change the way we do business. We'll be able to trust computers, I hope, with more kinds of work, but there'll always be new work coming up to supplant that. So there'll still need people to do that sort of thing. Overall, effects of autonomic computing is a plus. Fewer tedious jobs. Don't worry, the supply of tedious jobs will increase to meet the available demand, though we will always have tedious jobs. But I'll just throw that out to you that it's a good thing. You won't necessarily have to do backups, let's say. Maybe that can be taken care of for you. Or you won't have to necessarily debug your cluster to find out which disk drive failed or which is about ready to fail. A program will be able to handle that. And that will give you more time to help your human users, and you can look at that as a plus or a minus. But what is going to come out of this is we're going to be having more specialization. One of the people I talked to suggested there would be three kinds of system administrators after autonomic computing is fully in swing. The generalists would work for consumers and end users, company X. And think of them as like the nurse practitioner. You don't go there to have your tonsils removed. You go to a specialist for that. But the nurse practitioner can handle 90% of the cases that a GP can handle. But then we'll have specialists. And I suspect those folks will work for the vendors themselves. Specialists will be really intimately aware of what happens on the lower level of each disk drive, of each piece of software like a web server or other more complicated software. Each kind of autonomic computing system or subsystem will probably have specialists who know the guts of that thing and know exactly how to take it apart. But then there'll be the super generalists too, which that's a great chance for entrepreneurial effort. This is like your MD, general practitioner. This is a person who knows a lot more than your nurse practitioner does, but who doesn't necessarily have the in-depth knowledge of individual pieces of software or hardware. So those are the three that person thought might come out of this. And that makes good sense to me. I think you'll see that autonomic computing will really impact people who are currently specialists, DB admins, storage admins, more than the general network administrators or system administrators. So it will change the profession, but your profession is changing anyway, right? But it's not going to take away jobs. It's just going to change the way people think about their jobs. Future directions. Right now, autonomic computing is a research topic. It's not a commodity. It's not something you can just buy off the shelf. Give me one autonomic computing system with that, please. Doesn't happen. There's lots and lots of possibilities. So right now, autonomic computing is something that is really nice to have, but not necessarily something you see everywhere. As it becomes more and more of a commodity, we'll start to solve some more problems and have known solutions to more problems, and that ITIL will become something that people are more familiar with. One of the people that I talked to said that in a year or so, a certain company that he was doing research for will have an autonomic computing industrial-based prototype on the street. Researchers tend to be very optimistic about what they think. I do not know what this researcher is working on particularly or what company he's working with. I'm not at liberty to say some of the things that he told me about it, but I have my doubts that that's going to solve all the problems. But it will probably be a help along the way. It'll be another stepping stone. And that's what we need. We need stepping stones. AC will require serious new OS primitives. And by that, what I mean, you remember I told you the story about the overloading of the idea of priority. We need to have more things like utility functions as OS primitives. And utility functions are like you ask your wife, what movie do you want to go to tonight, or your husband, what movie do you want to go tonight? And he says, Rambo or whatever. Well, how much do you want that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want that movie? Would you rather have this movie instead? Give me that on a scale of 1 to 10. That's what a utility function does for you. It gives you more than a yes or no answer. It says, well, this is a 7 for me, but that's a 3, so I can trade off that 3 for this 7 if you'll give me that. That's the way computers need to be able to talk internally to figure out how to share resources. And this is not simple because this has to be a primitive in the operating system and in the infrastructure. So it has to be available at some of the very lowest levels, like memory management, for instance. We have to be able to do utility functions at low levels, and that's going to take a while to do. But I think that's what we're looking forward to in the future. Modularity, standardized interfaces, getting people to agree, getting reliability is really tough. These things are going to take a while, but these are directions I think that the technology is headed in. One person said that autonomic computing will have to be better than moon launch reliable before it can be seriously adopted. I talked to Mark Burgess earlier, and he said, that's a crock, that's not true. And there's a certain extent to which it isn't true. It doesn't need to be that reliable because it will hit the street before it's that reliable. But if you think about the complexity of today's data centers, how many hard drives, how many CPUs, how many network interconnections we have, the systems are already having to be moon launch reliable. And autonomic computing is not like that yet. But it will need to be reliable enough to work in today's infrastructure. It wasn't long ago since people would have been saying, Linux, well, that's not a mainline operating system. How can that be reliable enough for my data center? Well, now it is. And maybe someday autonomic computing will be too. But right now, we're not there yet. As a human-centered computing researcher, my belief is that what we are really trying to do here is replace certain functions, certain low-level functions that a human administrator does. In order to do that, we need to do a lot more ethnographic research. We need to find out what exactly is it that you do as a system administrator, or as a DBA, or as a storage administrator. What exactly do you do, and can those things be quantified? And that's what the ITIL is all about, is trying to quantify what people do. Now, I used to work for the government, and we were famous for coming up with hundreds and hundreds of pages of documentation to describe what a process does. And the idea is that I can go and get someone off the street to fill my shoes if I suddenly keel over because I have the processes all written out. But I guarantee you it does not work that way. The government is always in favor of trying to replace people with processes. It hasn't worked for decades. It's not going to work anytime soon. And I think that we need to find out really more what people actually do and try to model the software after what human administrators do. And that's going to take a lot of work, and we're just not there yet. But I think that's what the future holds, is doing that. Well, at least I hope. I hope the future holds doing that research, because if it doesn't, we're going to get a lot of bad tools. So my conclusions, I'm actually finishing up a little early, and if we have some time and if there are not any questions, I can tell you a little bit about what my research is at Pacific Northwest National Labs. But so AC is coming, but it may be slower than you think. It may not get here in 2 years or three or four or five or seven or 10 or 15. But it will come, and maybe someday you'll look up and say, hey, we're actually there. What do you know? Or we're one step further than we were. Or it's a recognizable advancement. But it's not going to happen overnight. And the good news is you will change as it changes because you'll learn new skills, you'll have new tools, you'll figure out how to progress too. And it's not going to be a bad thing. And a lot of people around here seem to be afraid of autonomic computing. Don't worry. That's my last bullet there. Don't panic. We'll probably repeat that a couple times. Don't panic. I think outsourcing is probably a greater job threat. The person I talked to, I think it was Doug afterwards, after the last session, said the outsourcing is really not that much of a threat now either to IT jobs because it doesn't work as well. You can't find people in India who want to do system administration. That was news to me. I didn't realize that. But I still think that even so, outsourcing is probably a greater threat to your job than autonomic computing is. How to prepare for autonomic computing? I would say the best way to prepare for autonomic computing is to be the best person you can be in your job, really. And that sounds silly, but it's true. To stay informed, to embrace change, to be ready to change and adapt to new ways, this is part of what it means to be a technologist today. You know, you really can't afford not to do these things. And if you continue to deliver great value to your employer, he's not going to want to replace you with a box. But if this last one is a problem for you, then you already have a problem. Autonomic computing can't solve for you or take away from you. But I would say, you know, use autonomics to improve your job performance. Get a hold of Puppet and CF Engine and some other ones. Figure out how they work. Write your own tools. Be part of the revolution. The worst thing that can happen is if you let a bunch of highly educated but not, I'll try to say this kindly as I can because I'm a PhD and I understand this, okay? Woolly-headed academics, you do not want them to be defining your autonomic computing for you, okay? Most people in the academia and in do not understand the jobs that you do on the ground, but it really would be cool if autonomic computing was open source, which is why I'm all behind things like Puppet. I think that's excellent, an excellent way to go. And I think that's really the only way we are going to succeed with autonomic computing is if it's open source. So how to prepare for autonomic computing? You make it up. Make it happen as we go. And once again, don't panic. What I'm doing as part of one of the jobs that I do at PNNL is I'm interviewing folks to find out what their experiences are, what they want to see out of autonomic computing. If you're interested in participating, write me, call me, or visit this website here. Which is the survey. Unfortunately, my company believes that it's okay to put my email address on that web page and everything else like that, so I can't really, I'm probably going to get lots of spam results from this thing. There's no password protecting it. Just go there and use it. So if you don't want to write me, just go there and take it, and I'll get the data out, and I'll separate yours out from the thousands of people putting in spam replies to it. But I would love to hear from you if you have ideas about autonomic computing, if you have thoughts about where it is going or should go or should not go, or if you have experiences with it. If you have no experience with it and you have questions about it, and maybe I can point you to the right people. I don't know. But there's lots of good people in the area here who, right now this week, you know, Alva Couch is here, Mark Burgess is here. Paul Anderson's another one. I'm sorry? Brian Desott, did you say it was? Narayan, okay. Sorry. And, I'm sorry? Yes, the keynote speaker, John Strassner. And there's one other I'm trying to think of. Andrew Hume is another good one to talk about. Take advantage of the fact that you're here this week and get to know some people who know it. But don't be expecting autonomic computing 1.0 to be arriving in a shrink wrap box on your front porch when you come back to your job. It's not happening.